I'm Richard van der Berg.
And I'm Duncan MacLeod.
This is Talk Central, episode 136 for the week starting Sunday, 18 October 2015.
Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central, where you'll find South Africa's best technology journalism.
That's right, Duncan. No headlines like poked by twerking Tokoloshi.
Thanks, Daily Sun, for that one. I guess we can't pick on that other tabloid forever. On Talk Central this week, we chat about Telkom's decision to create OpenServe.
Also this week, we chat about tech shares on the JSE, the idea of national open access wireless network, and we chat about the SABC's Glahudi Motsoeneng.
Before we get to all of that, though, we need to pay the bills. We'll be back after this.
Okay, my schnookums, I have to get back to work now.
Aw, but I'm going to miss you.
I'll miss you too, but I really have to go.
Okay, Poopsie, but you hang up first.
No, you hang up first, my little pumpkin pie.
No, you.
This is not a work call, but it is taking place at work, and you are paying for it. But with Voice Supreme from Vox Telecom, you get the best call rate at only 59 cents per minute, with per second billing. It's the perfect alternative to VoIP least cost routing. SMS 43255 and we'll call you back. Standard SMS rates, T's and C's apply.
Well, welcome to the show. Hi, Rafa.
How's it, Duncan?
Good, thanks. Good. What's news? What have you been up to this week?
Yeah, it's been a busy week on the deadline front. I think it's December is slowly approaching. I cannot wait to take some time off.
I can't believe it's almost the end of the year. I was actually in a game outlet this morning, and they've got all their Christmas decorations up. A bit early, I think.
It's a bit early, and a lot of the shops have started doing it. Come on, guys, just stick with a calendar. At least give us a month before Christmas.
Yes, not 2.5 months before Christmas. But it's going to be the end of the year before we know it.
Yeah, for sure.
Anyway, lots of tech news this week to talk about, and undoubtedly the biggest biggest news was an event that happened at Turban Hall in Newtown in Johannesburg. I think it was on Tuesday, and that was the unveiling of Telkom's newly separated, deeply functionally separated wholesale and network arm, and they did the big unveil of the company's name. And I was trying to guess it before the announcement came out. Now, I knew that the word open would be in the name somewhere, because of course we've seen OpenReach spun out in the UK, and I thought they'd lean on that quite heavily. And I couldn't come up with it. I was checking out co.za, which where you can do who is lookup on South African
domains.
Yeah, and I was going through various options, but unfortunately I didn't manage to find OpenServe, because if I had found it, I would have run the story.
Exclusive.
But I guess it's kind of an obvious name. Really interesting move by Telkom, and I think particularly interesting because this move hasn't really been forced on it. Certainly some aspects of it are it agreed to in its settlement agreement with the Competition Commission over its past anti-competitive abuses of its monopoly, when it still had a monopoly. I think that most of the decisions they've taken here, and certainly the extent of the separation that they've agreed to do here, goes well beyond what they required in terms of that consent agreement with the competition authorities. As far as I know, it's the first incumbent fixed line operator in the world that has actually done this voluntarily. And listening to the group CEO, Sipho Maseko, who's really done pretty amazing things for Telkom in the 2.5 years he's been the CEO, he's really turned the business around. According to him, this is a commercial imperative. They have to do it. And I guess in some ways it's been forced on them, and perhaps the changes had to be accelerated because of the rapid emergence of these alternative fixed line infrastructure providers, companies like Vumatel and Dark Fiber Africa and the other fiber providers that are giving it a real run for its money in the last mile. Suddenly Telkom has to play nicely with internet service providers, where in the past there was arguably a lot of cross-subsidization that went on between the wholesale and retail arm, probably not so much in recent years, but certainly historically. And Telkom certainly got into a lot of trouble with the competition authorities for abusing that monopoly and trying to run competitors out of the market. Now they're saying, well, you know, we've spun off OpenServe, this is going to serve the market fairly and equitably and transparently. And in fact, when I interviewed the newly appointed MD of OpenServe, who's the former MD of Telkom Wholesale and Networks, Alfonso Samuels, who's been with Telkom for more than 3 decades, career executive, he said that he is prepared to make a promise. He said that anyone who thinks that we are treating Telkom's retail arm in any way favorably or more favorably than anyone else in the market is welcome to come to my office and inspect our books to prove that we're not. So they sound like they're going to be quite serious about this.
Well, I guess they have to in many ways. I mean, how many more, what shall I call them, strikes can Telkom have against the industry that is already kind of, you know, trying to take them or an industry that's already kind of on the back foot when it comes to Telkom because of, you know, historical incidents.
Yeah, indeed. I guess there's a lot of mistrust out there as well, given some of that history. But they certainly sound serious about it. And I think that, you know, as long as this business is properly capitalized and is given the cash it needs to expand that network. And you know what I think is really interesting here is that in the past, Telkom treated bandwidth as a scarce resource and charged for it appropriate in line with it being a scarce resource. So charge a huge amount of money for a small amount of bandwidth. I get the impression that what's happened here is that Sipho Maseko and the team around him have turned that model completely on its head, or trying to turn that model on its head. Bandwidth has become a commodity and they need to sell lots of it in order to make money, which is the way telecoms should work.
Yeah, exactly.
It's certainly the way telecoms works in a competitive market. And I do think this has been forced on Telkom. I don't think they would have done this if the market hadn't become competitive.
They had to react and they had to, I think they had to leapfrog or try and leapfrog at least the current situation that South Africa is in with fiber deploying at such a rapid pace and broadband or at least bandwidth isn't becoming as a scarce commodity as what you said earlier.
Yeah. I mean, I remember the bad old days when there was only one international undersea cable pipe. It was owned by Telkom, SAT3. And international bandwidth prices were insane. They're probably less than 5% now of what they were 10 or 15 years ago. Yeah. And that's just because the competition has forced the prices down. I mean, if there's any doubt that you know, we wasted time with the so-called managed liberalization process that the government put in place, it just kept prices high for too long and kept Telkom as a lumbering monopoly for too long. I would argue that these changes should have happened 15, 20 years ago.
For sure. But I also think that as a result of all those things, we are seeing the landscape that we're seeing now with regards to internet infrastructure as a result of that. You know, if Telkom weren't that kind of player, I don't think many of these players in the market now in terms of fiber would have had a need or seen a market opportunity to deploy like they are.
That's true.
Or neighborhoods. I mean, if Barkers was very happy with their ADSL, potentially VDSL, they would not have stood together to get a second operator in or a second player in.
Yeah, agreed. And I think we mustn't underestimate the role that Teraco has played in all of this. The vendor neutral data center operator or telco neutral, they've put up this fantastic facility in Isando in Johannesburg and in Durban and Cape Town as well. They've got facilities there as well. And I believe they're building a second Johannesburg data center now as well. But this wonderful facility where all the operators terminate or peer with each other is fantastic because everyone just pulls fiber into Teraco and it's a way of getting anywhere you want to go without having to go through one particular operator to get your backhaul. So I think often Teraco doesn't get the credit it deserves for the impact it's had on the telecommunications market in this country. It's
certainly been a massive enabler for these interchanges you're talking about.
And I wouldn't be, I mean, just given the pace at which Teraco has grown, I wouldn't be surprised if they're one of the biggest telecommunications infrastructure providers in Africa within the next 10 years.
Sure. As long as we get fiber.
It's coming. anyway, we should both be fibered up at home by by in the next, I think you're going to get it first, but Telkom is promising fiber in our area by the end of March next year.
Yeah, the posters just went up in my street for Vumatel starting to trench. I just hope they don't mess with my curb. But I'm looking forward to it. I can't wait to have a little lit fiber in my house. It's a dream come true.
It's going to be fantastic. Yeah, what speed are you going to get?
I think realistically, I'll probably go for 50 meg. Financially, I think 100 meg is still... You can't really justify a few grand for 100 meg up and down.
You actually don't need more than 50.
You don't.
You can stream 4K video at 50 megabits a second.
Yeah.
Easily.
Well, for me, the big thing is the upload speeds and multiple lines. I mean, if we stream multiple... HD streams in this house because we don't have DSTV. You know, that's 10 meg or 8 to 10 meg a pop.
Yeah.
You know, with a 50 meg line, you can do 3 or 4 of those.
Yeah, that's true.
And not worry too much about buffering.
Yeah.
That's all I really care about.
Yeah.
And also security cameras. I think a big thing for me would be... I've got some beautiful Axis surveillance cameras that I'm going to hook up to the internet.
Okay.
And then provide to my street so that everybody can log in and see what's happening, which I think is going to be quite cool.
I might ask for your help... to set some of those up. I've got a couple of security cameras gathering dust in a cupboard somewhere. My DSL has never really been suitable for hooking up those sort of things, but when the fiber comes, I may look at doing it. But I did play around with one of those Axis cameras some time ago. I found it a bit difficult to set up. But I'll come to you for some higher grade advice.
Yeah, look, the software is easy. You just need to do your modem, your DNS settings.
I think that's the tricky part.
Then DNS is a trick.
Yeah, yeah. But it doesn't have to stream all the time, does it? You mean you can put a motion sensor on, so it only streams, or you can access it on demand.
Yes.
So that you're not chying bandwidth all the time.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. There's a couple of ways you can manage it. There's actually, interesting enough, and it's probably a conversation for another podcast. But there are some services that you can actually stream to, and then they will keep like a.
Oh, right.
Cloud-based DVR service for your video.
Cool. Oh, that's cool. I think Vox Telecom offers something like that, doesn't it?
Possibly. I must look into that.
Guardian Eye.
Oh, Guardian Eye, but that's using their hardware, though.
Yeah, but I think they also offer a cloud-based surveillance solution. I think they actually, for businesses, I think they offer a solution where they actually monitor off-site. If there's movement detected, they'll fire it up on a screen and see what's going on. I should have a look at the details there. But they definitely offer some sort of cloud-based... security
streaming
video storage mechanism as well.
It's definitely worth exploring once we both get fiber and we can actually explore these products.
Yeah, for sure. I'll be setting up a bulldog cam.
Never misses anything.
Cool. Alright, we went from Telkom to bulldog cams. How did we do that?
Fiber. Everything goes through fiber.
I wanted to chat a bit. I did a bit of a fun story, and it's actually something I want to do quite often on Tech Central, maybe on a quarterly basis, perhaps 6 monthly, maybe quarterly is too often. But I took a look at all the IT and telecom stocks on the JSE, and there are less and less of them these days because there have been so many acquisitions and buyouts and delistings. But, you know, there's about 15 companies that you could broadly put into this category. If you're quite broad about the definition, include a media and technology group like Naspat. But what I did was I had a look at the share prices of all of them over 1 year, 3 years, and 5 years to see which performed the worst and which performed the best over that period. And some really interesting results came out of it. The numbers obviously don't include, the comparisons don't include any dividends that may have been paid over that period. So some of these companies would have distributed dividends to their shareholders, which would have obviously had a depressing effect on the share price when those companies paid out that money. But interesting numbers, a couple of real losers on the list, and a couple that have done absolutely fantastically. So let's start with looking at the 1 year number. The best performer over just 1 year, and it's a company I must admit I don't follow all that closely, although I know the management team there quite well, and that's Huge Group. They're a telecommunications business, and I think a lot of people wrote off when the mobile termination rates started to come down, but they seem to have managed to put that behind them. I think a lot of people were worried that they were big in the LCR, least cost routing business. And they were. And I'm not quite sure how they've managed to turn the business around, but certainly the share price has been performing very well. And they, over the last 12 months, they're the strongest performer amongst all the tech shares on the JSE, up 105%. So if you bought them a year ago, you would have more than doubled your money. Over 3 years, they're up 220%, and over 5 years, they're up less than that, 100%. Still a good return over a three-year period. Over 3 years and over 5 years, there's a different category winner. And this company has performed absolutely spectacularly. Over 3 years, Adapt IT, which is a Durban-based IT services business, I think they're based in Umhlanga, if I'm not mistaken. Over 1 year, they've returned an 80% return to shareholders in terms of the share price movement. Over 3 years, their share price is up 626%. And over 5 years, their share price is up 2,037%. So imagine having plopped down 100 grand on that company 5 years ago. Jeez. How pretty you'd be sitting right now.
Yeah, if only we knew then what we know now.
Yeah. Wow. And they pay dividends as well. So pretty impressive stuff.
Phenomenal.
Pretty impressive return. The problem with looking at these things historically is that, the pictures are very much likely to change going forward. Not to say that Adapt IT isn't going to continue to perform well, but it becomes more difficult as you get bigger to keep returning those sort of returns. Although EOH, which is another very strong performer on our list, in fact the second best performer over 5 years, it just seems to keep returning year after year after year. I had a look at it the other day. The share price looks expensive. I think the PE ratio is sitting above 30, which is quite demanding. But over 5 years, EOH has returned 1,000%, and over 3 years, it's returned 300%. So that's nothing to be sneezed at. Mm. If you had invested, on the other hand, in Ellie's Holdings, you'd be crying into your beer right now, because over 1 year, you would have lost a third of your money. And over 3 years, you would have lost 90% of your money.
Sure.
Which means you'd be pretty broke right now.
But they were quite a powerhouse in their own right a few years ago. What happened?
I think they've made a big bet on digital TV happening sooner than it has. Uh-huh. I seem to recall they've had a lot of issues around getting ready for DTT and then having too much inventory. I think they were also made a big bet on that OpenView HD platform that was launched by a sister company of ETV. And OpenView HD, I don't think, has performed nearly as well as they had been expecting it to. And I think that they were counting on that business taking off in a big way. So they haven't performed well. Maybe at some point it's a buying opportunity. But certainly if you'd bought 3 years ago, you'd have almost no money or none of that investment left now. Another very weak performer over the entire period has been Ultron. Which is the business that, of course, owns what's now called Ultron TMT, but Bytes Technology Group and Altec. They've had a torrid time in recent years. I think first the PowerTech division has been struggling for years because of the weak economy and weak orders. It's one of those old industrial companies. That's not really the fast growing part of the economy anymore. And of course, Altec's also run into some serious problems. A couple of years ago, KDN up in East Africa was a bit of a disaster for them. And now the local operations are also in some trouble. They launched the Altec node. That was a disaster. It cost them a lot of money. Their set-top box manufacturing business, UEC, down in Durban, is also not performing well at all. So anyway, if you bought Ultron shares a year ago, your cash will have diminished by 62%. And 67% who bought it 3 years ago, and if you bought it 5 years ago, your cash pile would have shrunk by 74%. So pretty poor performance from Ultron. But of course, in these weak numbers, there's probably some buying opportunity at some point. Unless the company's going to go to the wall, and I can't see that happening in Ultron's case. There has to be a bottom at some point, and I guess the astute investors watch for those bottoms and buy when the time is right.
Buy low, sell high.
Exactly. But when you're in the action and looking at these numbers, it's quite difficult to know when to sell them. Do you trade the stock market at all?
No, not at all. I've never played. I mean, it's something I've always... My fiance does a little bit. She's got some investments here and there. But I've never had the kind of the inclination to look at those numbers and figure out what I want. But now that I'm looking, the more I look at this kind of thing and the more we have conversations, Duncan, you and I, it certainly seems like something I'll be getting into my latter years, I think.
Yeah.
instead of playing golf, I'll play the numbers.
Yeah. I first got into the stock market, I think, about 15 years ago, when I was still fairly young and very naive. I bought tech stocks, and I burnt myself very badly. I swore I would never do it again. But in the last year, I've started trading again, been playing. Been thinking about what I'm doing before buying them, just instead of, oh, that sounds like a nice name for a company, let me buy that one. So I've been playing the stock market. Bought a company called Baldwin Properties yesterday. They've just listed yesterday. Quite a demanding share price, but I don't know if you see. Remember SummerCon, the company that put up all those crappy townhouses all over four ways. This is like the new SummerCon, but an interesting company. If you drive around the northern suburbs of Joburg, especially. There's a big development going up near Olivedale at the moment, and there's another one near William Nicol, between Rivonia and William Nicol. They're putting up these townhouse complexes all over the place, and the analysts seem to think they're a good bet. So anyway, I'm having a punt on them. We're getting a bit off topic though, talking about property stocks. So maybe we should check the show notes and see what we need to talk about next.
Yeah.
I wanted to talk about this interesting. Well, actually, it was this piece that was published by Martin Ritter, Dr. Martin Ritter from BMI Technology. He's a senior consultant to them, on the perils. I guess the perils is the right word of a national open access wireless network. And I know it's a mouthful, but it's something that the government and the regulator are getting quite keen on, and some of the mobile operators as well, for that matter. They're talking about building potentially one national open access wireless network. Not quite clear how this would work yet, whether it would be whether it would have a government as a shareholder or not. And there's a lot of talk about this, and the government looks like it's going to codify it in policy very soon, especially when it comes to the issuing of new spectrum licenses. This entity, whatever it ends up being, may end up getting a big chunk of that digital dividend band. Other spectrum, which the commercial operator is obviously keen to get access to. Now, there's also some pros to this, but there's also a number of cons. I'm leaning more towards the negatives of this one. Especially if there's only one player. I think that people who suggest that we should just have one national player in the infrastructure space are forgetting how bad it was when we only had one player in the infrastructure place. Telkom. And especially if you have a government-owned infrastructure player, I think it's a recipe for disaster.
No, definitely needs to be more open than that.
But go and read Martin Ritter's piece. It's a lot more subtle than I'm putting it across. There's a lot more detail and better thought out than I could ever vocalize it in this podcast. But maybe there's some advantage to doing this. But I think if we do it, it should probably be some sort of consortium. Where government could have a small shareholding. I personally wouldn't like to see them have a shareholding. But perhaps government could own a 10% stake of it, and then perhaps a whole bunch of ISPs, maybe one or two of the smaller mobile operators, could all own a stake in this infrastructure provider. And then also allocate spectrum on a commercial basis to guys that want to bid for it. So on an auction basis or a beauty contest basis, make spectrum available to someone like Vodacom, for example, which probably wouldn't want to get involved in this. They'd probably want their own spectrum to build their own network and have control over their own destiny.
For sure.
And then you'll end up anyway with the infrastructure competition, because you have the commercial guys or the non-consortium guys, let me call them that, with their own spectrum building networks and competing with this open access wholesale wireless infrastructure provider. But my worry is that given the ideology of our government, that we're going to end up with a single player with government as a big shareholder, or the only shareholder in it. And I think if we do that, and there's no competition in the infrastructure space, I think that's a recipe for disaster, because we're going to be going back to the bad old days of Telkom.
Exactly. We know when one entity is involved, I mean, you're never getting the best for the group or the best for the collective. Somebody's always got their own interest at heart.
Yeah, for sure. Anyway, go read Martin Ritter's piece. It's a long piece. I think it's 2,500 words, but it's 2,500 words worth reading. Really interesting analysis of other markets around the world where this has been tried and the experience. He talks about, I think, the Kenyan market. Talks about, I think, the Rwandan market. There was one other, and he also talks about the Mexican market in some detail. And he thinks the Mexicans are doing it quite well, but even there, he's got excuse me, he's got concerns about whether they're actually going to manage to pull it off. And given how weak our policymaker is, and given how weak our regulators are in South Africa, especially ICASA, you know, something like an entity like this would need to be carefully managed and regulated. I think that we probably shouldn't be considering going down that road, at least not without competition in the infrastructure space.
Oh, yeah.
Cool. I think our last news, a bit of news we want to talk about, is our favourite chap at the SABC, Klawuti Motsoeneng, the chief operating officer. Soon, I suspect, to be no longer at the SABC. And the way things are going, although he's hanging on tenaciously.
He's going to go out with a bang.
I suspect so. They're going to drag him out of the building.
It'll be good for TV ratings.
Oh, yes, indeed. And speaking of TV ratings, he has suggested that his disciplinary hearing, which is going to be held on the 30th of this month, be broadcast live on television. And I think, what a fantastic idea.
We should have more government policies or government disciplinary hearings
exactly.
Broadcast on TV. That'd be amazing.
The SABC is going to have its best ratings ever.
Sure.
Of course, we know it's not going to happen, but he's just blowing hot air. Yeah. I think it would be wonderful television to watch. Of course, the SABC is handling this internally, so expect a whitewash. I think the courts are going to have to remove this guy. if it were to happen, it would make for great television. And as a number of people on Twitter and elsewhere pointed out, maybe they shouldn't broadcast it on the SABC. Perhaps the most appropriate place to put this would be on Comedy Central. Anyway, we'll get back to Klawuti Motsoeneng shortly, since we're getting to our, you guessed it, our winner and loser of the week. And our winner this week, let's start with the loser while we're talking about
it. Yeah, on the topic.
Klawuti Motsoeneng is our loser this week for not knowing when to go.
And didn't we also pick him as a loser for the same reason last year?
Last week we picked him.
Yeah, but last year we had the same conversation about not knowing when to go.
Yes.
I remember that.
Okay.
Anyway.
Yeah, he's our loser of the week 2 weeks running now. And I guess is a contender for our final podcast of the year when we pick our winner and loser of 2015.
Yeah.
So he certainly put his hand up for that one. Our winner this week, and we've also covered it in our news section, was Telkom. I think for having the foresight to spin off its wholesale and networks arm before being told by the regulators that it has to do so.
Mm.
And I think Sipho Maseko is right. It's good for business. I think this, I think it's still early days, and we need to see how the whole thing unfolds and how this business behaves in the market, and whether it's going to need to be regulated. They say they won't need to be regulated because they're fully committed to doing this, etc. But I think kudos to Telkom and to its CEO Sipho Maseko. I think well done to them. In fact, let's make Sipho rather than make a core legal corporate entity a winner. This thing has been driven by the CEO and the Sipho Maseko, so he's our winner this week for that for that development, the creation of OpenServe. What is your pick?
So there's this website that I've kind of been following for the last few months, and I also subscribe to them on Facebook simply because I absolutely love the photographs that appear in my timeline as a result of their posts. The website's called foodbeast.com, and it's I'm sure some people may not really appreciate this, but it's somebody that absolutely loves food of all kinds and just love experimenting, exploring the different kind of strategies one can implement with food. Foodbeast is definitely worth checking out. They do some crazy things. They write about some crazy food pairings and food creations. Some of them is absolutely ridiculous, and some of them I have tried to make myself. I'll put it out there. But it's well worth checking out. Foodbeast.com. It's just interesting food-related stuff, but they do deep fry a lot of things. They do write about deep frying a lot of things.
Sounds terribly unhealthy.
It is brilliant, and they also write about interesting things from in the world of food, from around the in the world of food internationally. At least.
Is it Tim Noakes approved?
No.
It doesn't look like.
No dietitian approved. No doctor approved.
No, you probably have to go for a cholesterol check after eating.
We should probably say that the website is not safe for work if you look at the type of foods that's on there.
Oh, yes. Say no more. You'll have to go check it out to see what we're talking
about. But it's a nice little time waster if you like to spice up your Facebook feed, or just to subscribe to the website, or just to go to the website before dinner or lunchtime.
Very cool. My pick this week is a novel, actually. Going a bit off topic, but a bit afar to find a pick this week. And I'm only halfway through it, but I'm enjoying it so much I'm going to pick it now, on the expectation anyway that's got a fantastic ending, because I think it's going to. It's a brilliant book. Sci-fi.
Are you listening to it Audible, or are you reading it?
I'm listening to it on Audible. I read everything through Audible now.
Okay.
Read in inverted commas.
Yeah, yeah.
Have you read The Martian by Andy Weir?
No, I've not, but I'm going to watch the movie.
Okay. Great book, excellent movie too. Well, I should say excellent book, great movie.
Yes.
Very scientifically accurate, which it was praised for. But excellent sci-fi. And this is a lot, sort of in a similar sort of vein. Lots of science in it. I don't know how accurate it is, but it certainly comes across as accurate in the reading of it. But fantastic piece of sci-fi. It's called Saturn Run. Saturn the Planet, by John Sanford and someone called Katine. And the premise of it is that an astronomer, or someone working for an astronomer, is accidentally, pure luck, picks up an anomaly nearby Saturn. They pick up this object about 10 kilometers in length. They think it could just be something in the background or something. Normally, it would be, you know, something in far away in the galaxy that has popped up for some reason, a star exploding or something. But they discover this thing is slowing down and going into Saturn's orbit. And so they realize that this can't be anything else except for a giant alien spaceship.
Nice.
And so they organize, to cut a long story short, there's a race between the Chinese and the Americans to build a spaceship and get there first to find out what it is.
To claim it as their own.
Exactly.
Jeez.
I think the premise is brilliant. I've got to the part of the book where they've actually got to Saturn yet. They're getting ready to launch and head out, the book is about the race between China and the States to get there first, I can't wait to get to the second half of the book to find out what the spaceship is.
Sounds interesting. I want to see what does it come into.
My pick this week comes with a disclaimer. I haven't finished the book, but based on the first half of the book, I suspect the second half is going to be just as good. So if you're looking for some great sci-fi, and if you really enjoyed The Martian, then you've got to check out Saturn Run.
Yeah, that sounds good. It's definitely seems like a Hollywood movie as well.
The way it's it actually reads kind of like it was written to become a movie, a bit like The Martian was as well.
Yeah.
So I would not be surprised if a year or two from now this is a major Hollywood blockbuster.
And strangely enough, in the world of sci-fi, it seems like a relatively unique plot.
Yeah,
it does. Being real, it's
the sort of thing I'd imagine that Arthur C. Clarke might have come up with.
Mm.
He's written not exactly the same thing, but he's written some sort of similar sort of ideas. But a great novel, and it's really fast paced as well. It's a big book, but it moves along at a pace.
And how's the narration on the book?
Because it's great.
That also makes or breaks a good audible.
It's one narrator, but he's brilliant. He does different accents, and he's very good. Very good indeed. Yeah. So that's Saturn Run by John Sanford and Katine. And I'm listening to the Audible version. I'd highly recommend the Audible version if you listen to audiobooks. So I think that's the show.
Yeah.
As always, if you've got any feedback, send us a mail. We'd love to hear from you. It's info@techcentral.co.za. And you can also leave a post under the podcast entry on the website. Until next week, from Rafa and myself, cheers.
Ciao, ciao. We'll be right back.